take you on a tour this morning. First of all, I want to show you the advertisements that just came through that God is going to have an evangelistic meeting. He's sick and tired of the way we're doing it. So he's going to change things around a little bit. And I got hold of the two of the titles. And I'd like for you to check this one out. Can you read it okay? Can you all read that all right? Okay.
Did you get that off my website?
The Secrets of Hell, Live Demonstrations. Now get this, God is going to do this. So He's going to take those who are already lost and demonstrate for you what it's going to be like. You're going to be able to see and smell the flames. You're going to be able to hear the sounds. And if you like, you can have an advanced demo. And samples of it are available to all. Do you think God would get some converts if we had a more realistic view of what hell is like? Do you think it'd get our attention? Let me show you the next one. How about this one? Does that sound a little bit better?
Yes.
Maybe you could go to an evangelistic meeting that has this title. It sounds a little better. It might be a little more enticing. That is heaven revealed. God is going to show you the heaven realities. He's going to give you a tour of your mansion. You're going to be able to hear the heavenly choir. There'll be a banquet of everything you want in heaven to taste, so you can see in advance what it's like. And then if you want, you can either have the tour that's a daily tour or the extended tour. So it's up to you what you would like to do. How many converts do you think God would get?
They have good attendance
and
free food.
Yeah. Yes. Like a good Adventist potluck. Huh, James? you know, you start thinking about why God goes about things the way He does. And why He chooses to do them in the way that He does them. It just seems like there could be a better way. Because we just keep stumbling along and not really making any headway. So I thought maybe we could give God a shot at it and see if He could do a little bit better than what we're doing. Because I think He'd get everybody's attention. And that surely would be the dividing line. That everyone say, oh yes, I sure don't want that. Yes, I sure want that. Now, let's review just a little bit. Why does God not take that route? Why does He not do it that way? What's your reaction?
Because we have choices.
You what?
Because we have choices that we can choose.
Right. Okay. Well, boy, I could make my choice real fast.
Me too.
Why does He not do it that way?
That's not about Him.
Yeah. He wants us to love Him, not the food.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, it just doesn't work, Rob, and I think why He chooses not to do it that way. We've got whole Testament to indicate that fear will fix it. You can't scare somebody enough to get them to be good. Neither can you promise them enough rewards to be good.
Yeah.
They choose to do that for very different reasons.
Okay, so does that mean then that he's after something different? What is he trying to appeal to? When you start looking at when he was here and the things that he went through, the things that he did when he was here, why did he go about it in the way in which he went about it? And how quickly did they learn? The lesson today has to do with how God instructs disciples. How does He teach us? Would I ever forget a live demonstration of hell? Absolutely not. Nor would I ever forget a tour of heaven, what it's like. Remember when Ellen White relates how God revealed to her what the heavens were like. And she said when she came back to this earth, she kept saying, oh, how dark, how depressing coming back this earth. Well, it left an impression on her that she never forgot. And it seems like if God could sweep us away and do that for us, it'd be a mighty simple task. Why do we see Christ doing such incredible things over and over and over again? And did they get it? I mean, some of the most astounding things. So we're going to look at a few of those. And I think it's really critical for us to understand, what is he trying to get across to us? Why does he do it that way? What is he appealing to when he does it the way he does it? Now, if you took the summary of everything that we teach as a Seventh-day Adventist church, and for any church for that matter, what do you see the strong emphasis being? For instance, why a health message? What's that about? Why the Sabbath? Why does he all the emphasis that he has? If you notice that the emphasis is almost always on something that passes away. Why does he want me to get this healthy? In fact, while he was here, he had all kinds of sick folk that he healed again, only to do what? Yeah. And the ones that he healed generally got sick again. If they didn't get sick, somewhere along the line they were going to die again. Why all this emphasis? When we see what Christ is trying to focus on, I think it makes a tremendous difference in our lives on a daily basis if we recognize what he's really after. Let's take some examples. We're going to look at several of these. Start out with Matthew 8. Now remember, what we're trying to do is to see how did the God of this universe relate to and work with his disciples. That was God walking with them. So how did he relate? What was he trying to get across? And he's trying to instruct the disciples. So in chapter 8 of Matthew, let's look at verse 18. Notice This is something that we dealt with before, that when Jesus had done all the miracles during the first part of his ministry, it said that the next day they brought all of these ill people and demon-possessed and blind, I mean this huge throng of people, to the door. And the disciples were ecstatic because they said, look at the rewards, look what's happening. It's not going to take long at all before we get through. Imagine what they were thinking. If we ever went to war with the Romans and somebody got wounded, what would he do? Presto, up again they'd go and away they would go. When that large crowd got there, Jesus disappeared. And look what he says, verse 18. Now when Jesus saw a crowd around him, he gave orders to depart. Go the other side. Well, apparently he wasn't out to try to win a popularity contest. Something else was on his agenda. And a certain scribe came and said to him, "Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go." And Jesus said to him, "The foxes have holes, birds of the air have nests, the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head." And another disciple said to him, "Lord, permit me first to go bury my father." And Jesus said, "Follow me. Allow the dead to bury their own dead." And when he got in the boat, his disciples followed him. And behold, a great storm in the sea, so that the boat was covered with waves, but he himself was asleep. And they came to him and awoke him, saying, "Save us, Lord, we are perishing." And he said to them, "Why are you so timid? You men of little faith." I'm going to get into that in just a little bit. Now, was he chastising them? Was he putting them down? Let's go a little further. Then he rose, rebuked the winds and the sea, and it became perfectly calm. And I've shared with you before that when he stood up there, it wasn't screaming at the wind so that he could be heard. He just put his fingers to his lips and went, "Shh, be still." And the storm responded. And the men marveled, saying, "What kind of man is this, that even the winds and the sea obey him?" Notice, they didn't say anything about who he was at this point. Didn't say a thing. They marveled at the miracle. So here's one incredible example. Turn over to 14. Chapter 14. Now, notice in 13, tells a story of how Herod took John the Baptist and beheaded him. And then it says, "And when Jesus heard this, he withdrew from there in a boat to a lonely place by himself. And when the multitude heard of this, they followed him on foot from the cities. And when he went ashore, he saw a great multitude and felt compassion on them and healed their sick. And when it was evening, the disciples came to him saying, 'The place is desolate and the time is already past. So send the multitudes away that they may go into the villages and buy food for themselves.' And he said to them, 'They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat.'" Mark adds the story that the disciples just got back from being sent out to perform all kinds of miracles. At their hands, they performed all kinds of miracles. So when these people were there, Jesus says, "You give them something to eat." What was their reaction? They did not need to go. Would you give them something to eat? Verse 17. And they said, we have here only 5 loaves and 2 fishes. And he said, bring them here to me. And ordering the multitude to sit down, he performed this miracle. Now, what takes greater creative power? Create the grain in the beginning? Or to create bread out of nothing? What were they witnessing? They were witnessing the power of the creative God. Right before them, creation was taking place. How many fish can you make out of 2 little fish? What is greater? To make a leviathan, a huge whale, a little fish, or a multitude of fish out of one? Right before their eyes. So they saw the power of the creative God responding to their need. Right before them, they saw this. And they saw that perhaps 20 to 25,000 people were fed on that occasion. And how many baskets did they have left over? 12 baskets. So here was the creative God telling them. Now, here's the illustration. If we go to war and somebody gets wounded, big deal. Heal them. If they get killed, raise them alive. If we need food, you don't have to take caravans and caravans of food. Look at what he can do. All he has to do is just out of nowhere comes this food. What was the concept that was forming in their mind? And so you think now with these wonderful lessons that they would get it. But notice what happens. And folks, please don't think that I'm trying to demonstrate the stupidity of disciples. Because I would be at the head of the list. It has nothing to do with the stupidity of the disciples. It has to do with the way God teaches us. The way God leads us. He knew what they were like. Now, you would think that they would be able to fight anything, to face anything. Look, he can heal anyone. He can create all of this bread and food out of nothing. Watch what happens. By the way, as we understand, it was Judas who was trying to say, look at all this, let's make him king. And that's why Jesus said in verse 22, and immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side while he sent the multitude away. There was a tremendous struggle in the hearts of the disciples. He didn't know what he's talking about. He's reached his objective, let's make him king. Jesus forced him to go away. And after he sent the multitude away, please look at this text closely. After he had sent the multitudes away, he went up in the mountain by himself to pray. And it was evening, he was there alone. But the boat was already many stadia away from the land, battered by the waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. Did he have any idea what was going on? Mark says that Jesus saw them battling the waves. He's up in the mountain. He saw what they were going through. Now remember, he already stilled the storm. He fed 5,000. Incredible miracle. The storm comes, and what do? Fighting like crazy. Jesus sees their struggle. And he comes out and he walks on the sea. And it says he walked, it appeared this way. There are the disciples, and he was just walking along like this. And the disciples seeing him, thinking it was a ghost. And they cried out. And one of the most incredible statements, when they cried out, Jesus says, "Do not be afraid, it is I." Now you look at it saying, he's just using proper English. When you find out what he really said, he says, "Do not be afraid." The word they used for "it is I" is the same word they use for in the Old Testament for Yahweh. Do not be afraid. It is Yahweh. And the story goes how Peter says, "If it is Yahweh, invite me to come." And he says, "Come." And Peter gets out of the boat and he walks. And we know the story how the wind got so big and a wave come up between them and how Peter cried out because he started to sink. And what did Yahweh do? Reached and caught him and brought him up. And what was his statement to him? It says when he got in the boat, the storm was calm. Now they've calmed the storm twice. Fed 5,000. And they made the statement, "Behold, this is the Son of God." How many people had they seen healed? How many miracles had they experienced?
Many.